Large private businesses will not have to require workers to be vaccinated against COVID-19 or be subjected to weekly tests. In a 6-3 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down President Biden's vaccine mandate for employers. It would have affected businesses with 100 or more employees. It's about 84 million people involved. It also would have required unvaccinated workers to wear masks indoors at the office. But in a separate 5-4 ruling, justices upheld the vaccine requirement for healthcare workers in facilities that get federal funding. Chief Justice John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh joined the court's three liberals in that decision. The rulings come as the Omicron variant continues to spread rapidly across the country. According to Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. is reporting an average of 786,000 new infections per day over the last week. The Department of Health and Human Services says hospitalizations are up 27% over that same span. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court decisions? Do you support vaccine mandates or not at the federal level, or should it be states, local governments, or maybe individual businesses that should make these decisions? Would you have been affected by the mandate for businesses or the one for healthcare workers? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Charlie Jacobs is a professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He specializes in public law, judicial process, and American politics. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Any surprises here, Charlie, in this pair of rulings?
Yeah, I don't think so. Because of the tilt that we've seen over the last few years towards a more conservative court, this really sort of fits in with their approach to administrative law and the application of discretion that's given to agencies like OSHA and the Department of Labor. So just because of the membership of the court, it doesn't seem unusual. I will say that some of their justifications for their ruling, I think, are a little brief and need some explication. And I think that's what the dissenters, in particular, in the National Federation of Independent Businesses case, the one that eliminated the mandate, or at least put a stay on the mandate, that's what they were really saying about the per curiam opinion here, was that it didn't really flesh out many of the reasons why the mandate wouldn't be permissible in this particular circumstance.
I want to read a couple snippets from the majority opinion, unsigned, but as you alluded, the six conservative, or generally described as conservative, justices voted to put that stay on that mandate. Here's a quote or two. Although Congress has indisputably given OSHA the power to regulate occupational dangers, it has not given that agency the power to regulate public health more broadly. And it went on, requiring the vaccination of 84 million Americans selected simply because they work for employers with more than 100 employees certainly falls in the latter category, a category of, I think, overreach and arbitrariness they were arguing. Is there something to that argument, that this goes beyond OSHA's power as authorized by Congress, and it unfairly distinguishes one kind of employee from another?
Well, this is probably one of the biggest debates within administrative law, and this is not a topic that usually lights everybody's world on fire to talk about these kinds of issues, sort of deep in the weeds of bureaucracy. But it's about what kind of discretion that agencies get, and when can they fill in the blanks of ambiguous legislation. So really what you saw was an argument here between the majority and the minority justices about how much latitude do you give the agency to create these kinds of rules and regulations when Congress isn't really specific. And so from the dissenters' point of view, these sort of emergency orders are exactly the kind of thing that Congress would expect OSHA to do, because no one can predict the future. When you offer these kinds of powers to an agency, what you're saying to them is, we're going to defer to you and your expertise to tell us when the federal government has to step in and help to mitigate these kinds of issues. And what the majority is saying is, well, if we do that, if we allow this kind of interpretation of vague, ambiguous phrases in the legislation, then in essence, what happens is OSHA substitutes itself for Congress. And Congress may have never intended for this kind of regulatory scheme to be created. And so that's sort of the pull and the tug of this debate. Both have merit. Both sides have merit here, because you don't want an agency to just be creating out of whole cloth their own perceptions about what the law should be. But at the same time, and this really comes through in Breyer's opinion, this is exactly the kind of thing you would expect to happen from OSHA. If you see, as we did at the outset of the pandemic, sort of meatpacking industry and the like, where you saw massive outbreaks and deaths caused by COVID, that this is the kind of remedy that we would expect OSHA to implement to make all workers, not just those in specific industries, safe.
From that minority ruling in this particular case, here's a quote. This ruling, quote, undercuts the capacity of the responsible federal officials acting well within the scope of their authority to protect American workers from grave danger. And that's the argument from the three liberal justices here. Yes, it may not be specifically outlined in Congress, the idea of a vaccine requirement from OSHA. It fits into OSHA's job, I guess, they say.
That's exactly right. And what they're trying to point out to the majority is a certain hypocrisy in their argument. So again, there is a valid argument to be made that agencies shouldn't be able to make up regulations that Congress never intended. That is superseding the authority of the legislative branch. But when the court steps in and says, no, the agency got it wrong, we got it right, they're doing the same thing. They're interposing their own view about how we should interpret ambiguous phrases in law and how they should be applied by the agencies in the executive branch. So what they're trying to do is kind of peel back a little bit of this hypocrisy, kind of, you know, pull back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz on the majority here, because they want to show that we have to defer whenever possible to what Congress may have intended and to allow a little latitude to these agencies to make sure they're protecting the public in these kinds of circumstances.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs, professor of political science at St. Norbert College, looking at this week's U.S. Supreme Court rulings blocking one vaccine mandate affecting employers from the Biden administration, the other Biden administration mandate for healthcare workers at places that get federal money, that was allowed to stand. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about either or both of those decisions. Let's bring on a caller now. Scott is with us in Appleton. Scott, hi.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I find great irony, and it doesn't matter to me, liberal or conservative, that they're allowing the protection of the people that protect us once we get sick. Yet the masses aren't directed. I think we're in the crisis mode. I think we're going to be dealing with this for years and years. And who knows, the next variant, who knows what that could do. But I think it's just a shame that we had an opportunity to put a little heat on those that are unvaccinated. I know that's not politically correct. I don't care, because I look at the good of the whole rather than a handful of people that are digging their heels in.
Scott, thanks for the call. Charlie, Scott thinks it's okay for OSHA to use this to pressure the unvaccinated to get vaccinated. Is that it for the benefit, he says, of our overall healthcare system and healthcare workers? Is that something that justice has considered here?
I think that's one of the things that irked the dissent here. And there are two comments to be made about that. One, I think, is the point that this technically wasn't a vaccine mandate.
Right.
I mean, certainly that was going to be very likely the easiest way for compliance by businesses. But there was an opportunity where testing and masking could be used in lieu of vaccinations if there was objections by singular employees or by the company itself. But the other issue that was raised by the dissent was that in order to grant a stay, there are typically four elements that have to be met in order to grant the stay. That is to stop the enforcement of the particular rule or regulation. And the last one is, will the public interest be served if a stay is granted? And what Breyer and the others in the minority were arguing is, how could we say that the public interest is being served if we're going to allow unvaccinated people to avoid any mitigation of the potential of infecting other people? And so I think that sort of gels with what Scott was trying to argue here, is that there's a greater good, a community good, that the mandate was trying to create that the court seemed to overlook in some of its analysis.
Scott, thanks for the call. We're looking at the fallout from yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court rulings on President Biden's vaccine mandates with Charlie Jacobs, political science professor at St. Norbert College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did the court get it right or wrong on either of both of the rulings? One for larger employers, which the court put a stay on, says the government can't enforce that. One for healthcare workers at facilities that get federal dollars. The court said, yeah, that one can go ahead. What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Biden administration's vaccine mandates in a 6-3 decision along ideological lines. Justices put a stay on the requirement for private businesses with at least 100 employees, but in a 5-4 ruling, they upheld the mandate for healthcare workers at facilities that get federal funding. Charlie Jacobs stays with us, professor of political science at St. Norbert College, who studies the Supreme Court. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to those rulings, what they mean for you, if anything, or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Regarding the healthcare decision, that was one of the more rational decisions that the Supreme Court has made of late, although the 5-4 split is not encouraging. Regarding the business mandate, I think when President Biden instituted that mandate, he specified that the mandate was specifically to businesses with 100 or more employees, which gives me the idea that he was considering giving the small business environment a break from this mandate, and that it would be specifically the larger, presumably, companies who would be able to afford such a thing.
Got it. Cyril, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about that. Why larger employees with the employers with over 100 employees, Charlie, before we move on to the healthcare worker part of this?
So one of the issue there has to do with the Supreme Court's understanding of what kind of business enterprise impacts interstate commerce, because Congress has the authority to regulate interstate commerce. And the notion is that larger businesses are going to have a larger impact and as a result are able to be regulated by Congress rather than businesses that are local and their business is primarily, if not exclusively, intrastate commerce. So while I don't disagree with Cyril that there might have been an intention that some smaller businesses are going to have a more difficult time conducting testing, providing masks, or requiring their employees to get the vaccine, at the same time, it has something to do with sort of the overarching doctrine of the Supreme Court and the application of federal authority over states and local businesses.
Thanks for that call, Cyril, at 800-642-1234. And Charlie, Cyril's first comment gets us to the other lawsuit, the one regarding healthcare workers at facilities, again, that get federal money. 5-4 decision upholding that. What did you see in the arguments on both sides?
The distinction I see between these two cases is that the court found in the first case regarding the businesses and the application there that the original statute from Congress, what you call the Organic Act, was too vague to be able to extend the powers to that kind of regulatory control. But what the court was saying in the case regarding the healthcare workers was that because of the statutes that deal with the provision of Medicare and Medicaid dollars to the states and the hospitals, that there's a scheme of regulatory care that needs to be met. And this is almost sort of a foundational element. If you don't have healthcare workers to provide the services required by Medicare and Medicaid, the entire system might collapse. So I think that what convinced at least a couple of more justices to pull towards supporting this particular mandate was that it fit more closely in with what Congress intended the program to do. The OSHA regulation, they argued, did not, because it was too intrusive into the business practices for these companies.
Now, the minority wrote here, this is Justice Alito, a group of four conservative justices in the minority, writing, quote, "I do not think that the federal government is likely to be able to show that Congress has authorized the unprecedented step of compelling over 10 million healthcare workers to be vaccinated on pain of being fired," end quote. What do you think of that argument? Again, like the OSHA decision saying, yeah, this exceeds what Congress really authorizes here.
So embedded in these arguments that are going on here in both of these decisions is a much broader discussion that the court is having and, you know, political ideologies in the United States are having about the role and expanse of the federal government. So we've all heard that, you know, government's gotten too big, or the era of big government is here or over. That was from the Clinton administration. And part of what you're seeing here is an attempt by the more conservative members of the court to rein in the ability of agencies to regulate. And what Alito is saying there is, you can't act as a regulatory agency unless Congress specifically gave you the power. And that may sound reasonable, but the problem is that as we watch our Congress today fight over the smallest and largest kinds of issues, to expect that Congress is going to be able to draft a very large piece of legislation and be so specific that it covers every potential eventuality is unlikely. That's why discretion is often permitted in the way in which agencies create these rules. Because if we didn't give them that this discretion, Congress, A, would have to be very specific and become very collegial very quickly, or the ability to regulate would almost be eliminated.
Let's go back to our callers. Scott is with us in Menominee. Scott, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Scott?
Well, on the case of the employers that, you know, with 100 or more employees, I think that was probably pretty good. You know, when you get more than 100, you're getting into the corporations, you know, multi-state kind of groups. They're going to shift stuff around anyway, like, I mean, throughout all the regulations, so they can, you know, go from state to state and do their thing that they usually do, maximize profit, and that's good. But and then plus, you know, I think, you know, as far as government goes, it's not really the government's job to protect us, you know, for everything either. There's got to be some kind of, you know, accountability. So you'd think even just some of these big companies would be like, hey, we're big and we can do this ourselves without the government, and we can, you know, slow spread, stop spread, what have you, you know.
Scott, thanks for the call. Scott saying we can leave it to big companies to figure out what works for them for protecting health at the workplace.
And I think Scott may be onto something there, that, you know, we have to rely on each other to be able to do what's right for the community. And we don't always have to rely on government. I think in some circumstances, some companies and corporations were looking for cover, and the government was going to give them that cover instead of having to make the decision on their own and maybe take the slings and arrows from their local communities or their employees or their shareholders, for that matter, that if they said, well, the government is making us do this, that they had a built-in excuse for why they were doing it. So I think that there is something to be said for that as well, that that's the kind of responsibility that we expect from government, is that they will lead because they have the resources to be able to do the research to tell us exactly what the most prudent approach is. Now, of course, there are those who are going to say, you know, we have to expect in different areas of the country with different kinds of businesses and industries with different imperatives that they should be able to figure out their own scheme to solve these problems on their own. So this is a debate that is central to American politics and has been for more than 200 years. And just because this is a once in a generation pandemic doesn't mean that these kinds of ideological issues are going to evaporate.
Scott, thanks for that call. Angela joins us now in Baraboo. Angela, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call. It's less about the logic of the Supreme Court decision and more about the emotional aspect of some of the healthcare workers who are avoiding vaccination. I work in healthcare. My husband and I both had COVID. I nearly lost him. And I am vaccinated, and so is he. But I do also understand, because I have worked in hospitals for 30 years now, that there comes a time with each new disease. As a healthcare worker, you're constantly being tested for something. Once a year, you have to get TB, you have to get flu, you have to get this, you have to get that. And after so many years of doing it, you really feel like, wait a minute, this is my body. This is my biology. You know, I don't belong to anybody but myself. And so while I do vehemently encourage people to get vaccinated, because while you still might get sick, it will save your life. I do believe this. I can also understand why some healthcare workers are going, wait a minute, you know, no, this is one more thing and I don't want to.
Angela, thanks a lot for that call. Charlie, a nuanced thoughts there about our personal sovereignty over our bodies versus our own personal health and our, I guess, ability to protect other people's health.
And, you know, it goes back to the comment I made earlier about those four elements about whether or not a stay is going to be granted. The second of those is, will the party bringing the case suffer some sort of irreparable harm if there isn't a stay? And that, I think, is exactly what Angela is bringing up. If you have to get the vaccine, for some people, that's irreparable harm. And there's no way to undo that vaccination. And I think that's what the majority was looking at in this particular case. Are there other methods where we can avoid the transmission of this disease without forcing so many people, having this great economic and social impact? Are there other ways which we can accommodate these people? And I think that's in part what led them to the decision that they made.
Angela, thanks for the call. Charlie, you've emphasized this is a stay. Is there still court action going on, especially on the employer mandate?
Yeah, they can still bring a case and it can have a full review before the court to determine whether or not the stay takes in place and that they overturn the rule or regulation, or they lift the stay and allow it to continue. But the court has great discretion about whether or not they're going to hear a case in full. So we'll see whether or not the court offers that in the future. You need four votes, four of nine justices. You had six in the majority here. So there's a chance that this will not come to the court again.
Charlie, thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob.
That's Charlie Jacobs, professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. We talked to him today about the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings on a pair of vaccine mandates from the Biden administration, striking down effectively a requirement for large private businesses, upholding a similar order for certain healthcare workers.